All right, we're back on the Weird But Harmless podcast with Tim and Ferris. We've got a special guest today. He's coming out of retirement to fight on, what's the date? I should have got that before.
May 19th.
May 19th. For the first time in over 10 years, Hank, Hammer of the Gods, Hamilton. Say hi, Hank.
Hi.
What's going on, Hank?
Not much, y'all.
You gotta get a little closer to the microphone.
Are you nervous? Did you get nervous on him?
Yeah, I know.
No, I don't get nervous.
You don't get nervous?
No, not at all.
What are you going to do when there's radio interviews?
I haven't done a radio interview in 10 years, so that's a really good question. I've done some job interviews lately, though.
Yeah.
And those went really well. I was really confident in those.
Yeah, but no one's really watching those.
This is true. Nobody's going to watch this either because you just told me it wasn't video.
Well, it's not video. Well,
people listen.
We were listening to it.
You watch with your eyes, not with your ears.
You know, I know. What is Confucius saying? Did Confucius say that? Yeah, forgive me. By the way, I got crushed in the face by Brock Washington, a former guest, by doing jiu-jitsu. It was my fault. Do not put your head down, face
on
down.
Takedown.
A takedown. Yep. That's what happens.
Bad deal. Getting in the face. Get guillotine.
Yep. Get guillotine, yeah.
Got to get a little closer to the mic, though, Hank.
You might get kneed in the face or guillotined.
Here's the thing. See this thing? You can move this thing. It's what it's for.
That's what she said.
Yeah. And you see how the microphone is kind of pointed straight?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you do that, you'll be able to hear me much better.
Okay.
There you go.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
So, okay, first of all, I should know all these questions. I should have got these questions ready. But when was your very first fight?
Actually, let's not do that one just yet. What made you decide after 10 years?
Man, my athletic window is just about to dip down to the sill.
Yeah.
It's closing real fast. And I've always wanted to fight again. I just never put the effort into it and got myself, you know, got my mind right to do it. Just needed to get it done before I get too old to be competitive at all, which I know going into this, I'm going to be fighting somebody a lot younger than me. I'm going to be fighting somebody that's been training regularly and probably been fighting on a regular basis too. So it's kind of stacked against me, but it is what it is, man. Just got to get out there and do it.
Do you know who it is yet?
No, I don't even know if they have me an opponent yet or not, which honestly, it doesn't even matter who it is. It's not going to change my preparation. It's not going to change
Sapp.
My mindset. Hey, man.
If Bob Sapp could get that low.
I think you could beat Bob Sapp.
If Baba Sapu wants to come in and take an amateur fight instead of getting paid tens of thousands of dollars to do.
Shit, he got paid
a
lot more than
somewhere.
That for those freak show fights in Japan. He got paid six figures
but
easily.
But he's still getting 10K and more just to go take dives all over the world.
I'd take a dive for 10K.
Oh, God. So one day you're just training. And someone came up and said, hey, man, you want to fight one more time? Is that pretty much what happened?
Well, I'd actually made my intention clear with John back either right at the beginning of this year or I think it was towards the end of last year. I'd said, you know, I want to fight at least, you know, a few more times. And I'd not been able to get to class on a regular basis and stuff like that, so I knew it wasn't time just then. But after watching everybody fight in December.
Lit a fuse.
What's that?
Lit a fuse.
Yeah, it really did. It really did. Not just watching teammates fight, but just watching people get in there and compete, period. I'd not been to a live fight show in a long time either. And it really made me want to get back in there. Made me see it in a different light than when I was competing too.
Yeah.
Kind of set my mind at ease to get in there and watch live fights like that, knowing that I could get back in there and do it.
Keep going. His basketball texted me that he has the Chewbacca sound,
which is on point,
so appropriate. Yeah, absolutely. Your brother is a walking bath rug.
How dare you?
Oh, Basil the asshole.
A really handsome walking, talking bath rug.
You know, if you describe most. Our Basil's like dimensions to most people, you'd be like, this dude is just a hideous oaf. But Basil comes in and he lights up the whole room with a smile, his Arab charm, his beauty,
really,
you know, that he gets from, you know, our side of the family.
Yeah, his swarthy.
In fact, hold on one second. Keep going, Tim.
That's
loquacious.
Just, y'all are just giving him way too much credit. But, man, it's funny because I want to say, you know, like, you were like the first MMA fighter from the area. I mean, you were definitely one of the first, if not.
I wasn't the absolute first. Mike Braswell actually had an MMA fight from our gym before I did. And there were a couple other guys. There was Jamie McKinney. He had fought before I had around here.
I mean, I'm known. I mean,
my apologies to anybody that I'm leaving out.
I mean, I've known a few guys that kind of did the early form of MMA before, like,
yeah.
But you were just like, I guess, the first one, because I mean, I know Jamie decently, and you know, it wasn't big yet by the time he was.
No,
you were kind of like the first guy I remember getting any publicity when it got big, or even like right before it got big. Because I remember even before I started, they held a fight. I think it was in Fant Ewing.
Yeah.
And you were the only local fighter on it, and you won by armbar or something. And
oh, no, I never fought at Fant Ewing. I fought at the Civic Center here.
And maybe that's what it was.
I armbarred a guy by the name of Derek Krantz in 53 seconds. Now, I hope to God Derek Krantz doesn't listen to this podcast right now.
Derek's gone on to have a pretty decent amount of success.
Yeah, he's a great fighter, man. That guy is tough as nails. But I caught him when he was 19 years old. So he was 19 and I was 25. So he had just started out, and I ended up armbarring him about 53 seconds. But after that, I think that lit a fire under him to actually pay attention to jiu-jitsu instead of just coming out and slinging. And he's got a really good ground game now. He's won several tournaments in the gi and everything like that. He's he's really good.
Is he a black belt yet?
Man, don't get in line. I really don't know.
I think
he's at least a brown belt, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
He's got to be. I mean,
where's he training out of?
He's in Longview, isn't he?
Yeah, what is it? A team 5-1?
No, I don't think it's 515 anymore.
It was 50. Sure. It was some team, the 501.
It's five. It was 515.
515.
Yeah, I fought one of their dudes.
Yeah,
and he beat the brakes off of me.
Yeah, there's always been some tough guys coming out of there.
Calm down, Hank. You're all nervous.
Yeah.
And shit. You're all nervous.
Your attitude, no, like right when we said it was live, you just went.
Well, we've seen
I'm
multiple
just trying
people
to mind
do it.
My P's and Q's over here.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah. Don't worry. We can, like I said, we can edit, but don't make me edit, please.
Yeah, I'm going to try my best not to.
You can say, like, you can say what you want. Just don't, an hour later, like, hey, man, don't put, because I'm going to kill you if you do that.
Well, what made you kind of, I mean, you know, like, obviously when you started training, it wasn't the thing to do around here. And
no.
It wasn't a gym around every corner like there was.
Not at all. Shoot, man, when I started training with jiu-jitsu with John, we were actually started out in the West Monroe Rec Center aerobics room.
Yeah.
Holy crap, that was way back in the day.
Yeah, I mean, there would be maybe, you know, 6 to 8 people per class. That was a big class back then. That was back in the days when the UFC was barely getting back on pay-per-view, didn't have any kind of TV exposure. Pride was the big deal back then, and that's kind of what really got me into the sport, was watching Pride Fighting Championships, Sakuraba, the Gracies and everything like that. Oh my God, we just had a new challenger appeared.
And so, for those that don't know, Basil just walked in and ruined the mood.
I mean, he may have ruined your mood. It just brightened
me up. I make fun of Basil because every time he sees me, well, he doesn't done it lately, but for a while there, every time I'd walk in the door, hey, Tim, you motherfucker.
It's not outside? There might be a chair outside.
Actually, I'm being nice calling it. He'd go, hey, you motherfucker. He was a lot more brutal on me. But
where were we at on Hank?
Yeah, you're just starting out.
I was just talking about starting out. So back in the day when I started out, I started training with John in 2002 or 2003. I'd actually first started training any kind of MMA combat sports type stuff. I'd done like boxing and karate a little bit growing up. But then when I was in school at LSU in Baton Rouge and started training at a place called Russell Jones Kickboxing. And it was a traditional American kickboxing, you know, above the waist kind of style that he taught. But there were some guys training there that did their own thing, that went on to have pretty good MMA careers and kickboxing careers. There was a fellow you guys may have heard of by the name of Pat Barry that trained there.
That's right. That was in New Orleans, wasn't it? It's still there.
Well, no, it's in Baton Rouge. Pat was from New Orleans and had, you know, trained at places there, but I think he was going to school at LSU, but he was training at Russell Jones kickboxing as well, and he's actually the first person that I ever sparred kickboxing with.
Yes.
And this was before he was, you know, big or had made a name for himself or anything mm-hmm. like that, but he was still a beast back then. Guy named Kyle Bradley that fought in the UFC and fought a murderer's row in the UFC, fought Rafael Dos Anjos, Chris Lytle, and Joe Lauzon. He trained out of there. A guy named Chris Seifert, who was a heavyweight jiu-jitsu guy. He fought out of there as well. It was a little rough and tumble strip mall, old karate school with hardwood floors and a cruddy little floor ring. But some guys got some really good training. Oh, Doug Forney, Sambo Doug, as he's known around. He trained out of there as well and taught me leg locks, judo throws, and all kind of stuff like that.
A little sidebar.
Dustin Johnson, lots of guys back then that trained all down there. But, yeah, I started way back before the UFC got big, before the Ultimate Fighter or anything like that. I think my first actual MMA fight, I'd had a few kickboxing matches beforehand, but I think my first actual MMA fight was October of 2004 or 5. I think it was 2005. And I fought a dude that was, I mean, this was some straight roadhouse junk down in Morgan City, man. Shout out to my homeboy Steve that ran Battle Zone and the Morgan City Black Belt Academy, as it was back in the day, Gracie Jiu-Jitsu Morgan City. Shout out to Steve. He put on Battle Zone, which was a great little event down there in Morgan City. On a pretty regular basis for kickboxing, MMA, boxing, submission, grappling, all that kind of stuff. I fought a kid straight off the rig. He weighed in with his ball hat on with a fishing hook in it. I mean, just straight redneck. Wore some Chicago Bulls shorts to fight me in. Just bell rings. Dude comes out just pumping fists, running straight at me. I mean, it was like seriously some UFC 1 type stuff.
So basically, this was Mustang Sally's 2007.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, it was a sight to be seen. I had to tap him out twice. I armbarred him the first time, and I thought he had tapped because I had his arm completely extended.
Fucking tapping.
And the ref was right over us, and I thought he was stopping the fight because I had his elbow on my cup. I was about to break his arm, and I thought the ref was stepping in to stop it. So I jump up. Go jump in the corner, you know, I'm all excited and stuff. And they're like, he didn't tap out. And I'm like, what do you mean he didn't tap? I was breaking his arm. And they're like, no, he never tapped out. The fight's not over. You got to go again. And I was like, what?
Were there a lot of people at this event?
It was a packed house for the Patterson Convention Center.
Thank you very much. That was a
so you had.
It was 700-800 people or something, or 400 or 500.
So you jumped up on the top and you were like fist pumping, like I just
yeah. And everybody thought I had won too. Everybody thought the fight was over. So I'm like super stoked, you know. And then they're like, no, you still got a fight. And I'm like, well, all right, screw it, let's go. And we go back at it again and.
Did he come at you with the same fervor with his well?
He was a little more hesitant after being picked up and slammed a couple of times, but he still came forward, and I ended up trying to take him down again. He tried to guillotine choke me, and he wasn't letting go of this thing. He didn't have it, but he wasn't letting go of it. But I ended up taking him down, beating him up from side control, taking his back and choking him out, and then got up and celebrated again.
Did you like leave it twice. A little longer, like just like are we sure about it this time? You know, looking up there.
Nah, he tapped pretty emphatically that time.
I got one question for you. What was it? Was his walkout song like the Bulls?
No, it wasn't. Dun, 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 no, but another funny story about that fight. So I have been real particular about the music I walked out to, what shorts I wore, everything like that, because I'm super vain. Just putting it out there, just straight up. So
you have wonderful hair.
This is one reason I wish that we were on video right now.
I'm sorry.
Because I'm having a good hair day. But, so I wanted to come out to, some power metal song or something more, you know, me. But they couldn't get the burnt CD that I brought to work. And then I'd ordered some sweet In Spirit shorts from Japan that never got in time. So I had to borrow, Doug Schmitz's. Can't believe I'm saying this right.
Go ahead.
Oh, you're there now.
Red flamed Tito Ortiz Team Punishment shorts. I wore those for my first fight in 2005, and I had to come out to Eminem.
Welcome to early 2000s.
Yeah. I was not happy about it.
I mean, was it the real Slim Shady? Real Slim Shady.
Well, you came after that?
Yes. I didn't get to choose it. They were just like, yeah, don't worry, we'll hook you up. And then I came out to that. And I was pissed about it.
At least it wasn't Barbie Girl or something like that.
This is true. I don't know. I could have worked with that. I could have at least spun that. But making
it's
me come
intimidation.
Out to Slim
Shady. It's like, he's got to came out to Barbie doll or what song.
I mean, they send me out to that goofy shit. And then my next fight, I came out to Tupac. I mean, that was more along the lines of that. I always came out to gangster rap.
It's like the time Sean Jordan came out to Do You Really Want to Hurt Me at Bellator?
Yeah.
Beat up?
Yep.
Oh, my God.
Yep.
Do you really?
You know, I almost feel like that song in itself is a little played out because, like, that is the go-to song for somebody. It's like, hey, look at this. Coming out to a song that's kind of effeminate. Check it out.
It's about hurting me.
Yeah.
You beat me up in the ring.
So, I don't know. I think you, I mean, no offense to anybody that's ever done that. I just think there are other things you could do to be
Let me ask
a
you
bit
this
more
thing.
Original.
What if the person they pick to fight you is more handsome than you? What are you going to do then?
Man. Is that possible? That's a tough one, man.
Just some stud, just like chiseled,
it's
perfect
just
jawline, everything.
Louisiana's version of Luke Rockhold shows up to fight me, basically. Yeah. He's got a Mojo Wear sponsorship instead of polo.
I mean, is that going to get under your skin? You're like, oh man.
I mean, yeah, it might light a little fire under me a little bit. You know, it might make me chew gum a little harder to get this jawline a little more square, something like that.
Don't they have some kind of thing you can work on your jawline with?
I'm sure.
Like some kind of tool.
They got an exercise for everything.
I got a tool for your jawline. Hey.
Do me a favor. Don't scream so loud.
Yeah, I did that on purpose.
That's okay.
I did that on purpose. I'm going to cough later.
You're going to blow everyone's eardrums out when they listen to this.
Yep.
It's all right. So, you get the fight.
Mm-hmm.
And you win.
Mm-hmm.
You beat the white trash redneck with bull shorts on.
Mm-hmm. Hold on. We can't say it was white trash. We weren't there. I mean,
yeah.
We're just assuming.
No, he was a nice guy. Him and his dad was his trainer/corner man. They were both super nice.
I'm sorry.
But, he was just an untrained bar brawler dude that just wanted to come out there and fight somebody.
Yeah. And then after you beat him, you shook hands, and you're good to go.
Yeah. And then, yeah. I've never had any hard feelings with anybody I've ever fought.
Never.
Never. Never, 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 never.
No one ever talked crap to you?
No. Uh-uh. No. I've always been respectful of everybody that I fought, and they've always been respectful of me. I mean, I fought a guy in kickboxing. We fought three separate times, and he talked trash in the ring. But before and after the fight, you know, everything's always
like that mouthpiece, cool. like trash talk.
Yeah, you know, it's like land a shot. Oh, you like that? You want more? One of those deals.
Are we talking about your fights?
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay. So which fight was that? The one you beat the nice guy with the pull shorts on?
That was my very first fight.
That was
the very,
very
first
one.
MMA fight.
Very
like
first
I said,
MMA.
I'd had a couple of kickboxing matches.
If I'd listened to the beginning, I would have known that.
Yeah.
Your second fight. How many fights have you had in total?
Had five MMA fights. Official MMA fights, had a bunch of gym wars and all that stuff too, you know. Five MMA fights, three kickboxing matches, and then, you know, however many grappling matches from grappling tournaments or whatever,
yeah.
Which I honestly didn't do that many grappling tournaments back then either. I fought before I ever did any kind of grappling tournament or jiu-jitsu tournament or anything. It was kind of weird making that transition because it was really hard for me to get motivated to do a grappling tournament when I'd already been in several fights. And I was like, this guy's not trying to punch me.
He's not hurting me.
Yeah, I can't like get stoked for this. Even though I love jiu-jitsu and I love training and everything, it was just hard for me to get up as a competitor for those things. It wasn't the same mindset.
So, what was your record?
4-1.
4-1.
Lost my last one. I lost a decision to a guy named Joey Freed, who was always also undefeated at the time.
Is he out of Shreveport?
Yeah. Yeah. Ring Rulers champ for a while or whatever
Ring
it was.
Ring Rulers.
Yeah.
Don't knock it.
Did you fight for Ring Rulers?
I fought for him that one time, and that was the last time I had fought. Yeah.
How would you like Ring Rulers?
My experience with Ring Rulers was not the best, I'll be honest.
Yeah.
The organization of the show, as far as how they treated at least my dressing room, like my side of the locker room anyway, for I guess we were the opponent side. We were just in the old, you know, whatever it is, the convention center or civic center, whatever it is over there, Shreveport. Just had
there it goes.
Words.
Okay, we're back.
Okay, we're back. So, anyway, yeah, it was just an unair-conditioned locker room. Not very much mat space to work with. They had just, like, cases of room temperature water back there, nothing on ice. No ice to, like, ice anything down with. Like, you had to wait for whoever was fighting a fight or two before you to get done with their gloves so that you could put them on.
You had to use their new gloves?
Yeah, it wasn't like that. They did not have enough pairs of gloves for everybody.
I mean, that was just ring rules in general, though. I mean, they'd have a box and, you know, they'd like, when they were getting ready for to start the show, they'd glove up the first three fights, and then first fight's done, give it to the next set. I mean, that was...
And I was next to last fight on the card, so I had, like, soggy, sopping wet, gross, giant pillow gloves.
That was pretty common, though, and you'll find that in a lot of MMA shows. I mean, you're not dealing with the UFC when you get these amateur shows, man. These guys are going to spend as little amount of money as...
Production quality on amateur MMA shows varies wildly.
Yeah, which is funny, though, because you said that about Shreveport, because, you know, that was Ring Ruler's home base. And the one time I fought for him over in Shreveport, maybe I fought for him two or three times, but... One time I fought for him is in the Municipal Arena. Harley sponsored the event. It was a it was a legit, like, almost like probably better than a lot of Bellator shows you see on TV sometimes. You know, it was nice. And then I went to other shows over there. I was like, well, the one you and me were at together. It was like, man, let's just get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
Did you ever fight for Bellator? You didn't.
No, I did not.
Do y'all remember when Bellator? Because we were privy to some of the early Bellator fights, like Bellator 9 and like.
9 and
14.
Yeah,
it was early.
Mike was on both.
Fought Chaz Skelly, and I can't remember who else he fought. Oh, he fought Brock again.
But, and also, it was one of Jamie's, Jamie McKinney's. He fought Sean on one of those shows. Yeah.
And let's see, Hector Lombard fought on both of those shows.
He fought Jay Silva the second time and knocked him out.
I was about to say, it was some super short knockout.
It's funny. Yeah. I think me and Ferris have talked about this on the show before, but, you know, their show on the first Bellator show we went to, you know, they're showing all the, like, practicing of the guy, of Hector Lombard and the guy he's about to fight, and the guy he's about to fight from Lafayette.
Yeah.
And they showed him first. And we were like, oh, man, this dude might pull it off. And then they showed Hector Lombard working out. And me and Hector just looked. I mean, me and
this
Ferris,
is no. This is no USADA. Hector Lombard.
Yeah. This is middleweight juice to the gills. Yeah.
And me and Ferris just looked at each other like, man, this dude's about to kill this other guy. And sure enough, he did.
Well, here's the thing: is like the guy was also a military guy, so everyone was like super pumped up with patriotism and everything. Like everyone was jumping up and down, and then it got to a point where Hector was just elbowing him constantly. Like and they wouldn't stop the fight. Everyone went from like, hell yeah, to like, ref. You know, this guy's eyeballs hanging out. While he's elbowing him in the head and blood's going everywhere. And like, the whole crowd went from just being this drunken, like, country fest, like, hell yeah, to like,
Please get the stocky Cuban man off of him.
What we didn't know is that the ref... We were afraid for the ref's life. We didn't want him to start elbowing him. Then you'd have to bring in a guard dog to pull Hector away from him.
To steal a quote, you couldn't melt and pour me on Hector Lombard.
You what?
You couldn't pour me on Hector Lombard.
I've never heard that before, and I'm not even sure what it means.
What does that mean?
I mean, that means you could not. There's nothing you could do to make me go fight Hector Lombard.
And you know the thing about Hank? I mean, not Hank. Hector is that he's not very tall. He's not a
He's a short dude, but he's just nothing but muscle. Yeah,
dude, especially back in those days, he was nothing but muscle and steroids.
Oh my god! Yeah. But if we could pay you, if I paid you $100,000,
I'd fight Hector Lombard.
Okay. It was funny because that fight too. You know, I want to say Jamie and Sean were one of the first pro fights, and you know everybody at first was like Monroe, because the first round Jamie was had his cardio. Well, he had his gas anyway. And, Jamie, don't listen to this and beat my ass, please. I'm sorry. But, you know, everybody's like, Monroe. Second round comes out, Jamie's gas. Because I want to say he took the fight on like 2 weeks' notice.
Mm-hmm.
And Sean just went to town on it. And then you hear everybody, LSU. I was like, man, y'all are some sellout motherfuckers.
Yeah, that was, I just remember that. The joke, I remember making this joke as like, I can't think right now because all the oxygen has left the building from going into their bodies.
Jamie and Sean were just gigantic.
Yeah. Is Sean still in the UFC?
No, he's at Bellator.
He's at Bellator now?
Yeah, he signed with Bellator a while back, I believe.
And it's funny, earlier you were talking about Pat and Jamie, and Pat and Jamie had a kickboxing match against each other. And I asked Jamie, I was like, what was it like to go against Pat in a kickboxing match? He goes, man, I made it to the second round, and that's about all I can say about it. Yeah. He goes, man, I've never been hit so goddamn hard as it did when he kicked me.
He's kind of a short, stocky kind of guy. Or not short, but for heavyweight, he kind of was.
Pat's what, like 5'10"?
Yeah.
5'10", 5'11".
Something like that. He's around the same height as me, if not a little bit shorter.
Yeah.
So.
And he's just cranking in just leg kicks like it's nothing.
Being in the same room as that dude, when he would kick a bag, it sounded like, I mean, you hear this all the time, man, it's like getting hit with a baseball batter. It sounds like a shotgun going off. But it was just, like, it would stop you in your tracks, whatever you were doing in the gym. When you heard that, it was like, oh, shit, did something fall? Did somebody get hurt? Is there a beam coming down? And then you look over, and it's just him with a bag folded around his shin. It's freaking ridiculous, man. It's unbelievable.
So they tell you, we want you to fight. We don't know who you're fighting yet. We need you to get ready. You got about 3 months to get ready.
Yeah.
Where are you at right now? Where are you at in your training?
Where am I at in my training?
Yeah, without getting too detailed.
Man, I'm right where I need to be. I feel like with my weight and my cardio and everything, it's coming along. It's been 10 years. I don't expect myself to be in the absolute peak shape that I can get in first fight coming back. This is all kind of new still. I've got 7 weeks, and I'm right where I need to be peaking at fight time.
What are you fighting at?
170.
170, okay.
Yeah.
So,
I mean,
did you always fight at 170?
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, I think my first fight was at 185, but I didn't cut any weight. I think we fought at like a catch weight of 183 or something like that, but I didn't actually lose any weight for it. I'm just walking around weight.
At amateurs, it really doesn't matter as long as you're kind of like in the ballpark.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, I think that's different nowadays because the sport has become so much more professional. And when I say professional, I don't mean like everybody turns pro, but I think everybody trains more professionally now than they did 10 years ago. Everybody's the game has changed. Everybody's a little bit more well-rounded. Everybody knows you have to do conditioning and cardio and strength and everything like that too. It's not how it was back in the day where you'd just be like a dude that does jiu-jitsu or does taekwondo, and you're like, you know what? I think I'm going to take an MMA fight and see how this goes, and I'm just going to train hard for it.
Were your MMA fights professional?
No, they were all amateur. Yeah,
all amateur.
But back in the day, there was no difference in the rules.
Right.
Like my first two fights were full pro rules with elbows and everything with 4 ounce gloves. So I just did. I was doing pro rules against other amateur dudes for no pay.
Real quick, since Basil has joined us, and what is the rule separating pros and amateurs?
Time limit and elbows. That's it.
Okay. I remember like when I was actually fighting, we'd have this big meeting about the difference between pros and amateurs, but it was never enforced. It's like you can't do knees like this, or you can't, like when you clinch knee.
You couldn't pull the head into the knee.
You couldn't pull a head into the knee, but I swear to God, my head got pulled into a knee so many times.
I fought under those rules that one time. That was in that last fight I had in the Ring Ruler show. And it was really different because, like I said, I'd come from elbows, knees, 4 ounce gloves, the whole deal. And all of a sudden, we're wearing pillows on our hands. It was some other weird rules, too. Like, you could not punch them in the face on the ground if the back of their head was touching the ground. You, like, had to pick their head up, cup their head to throw a punch from the mound or from the guard, which is like, hey, let me just cup your head from the guard. Please armbar me. Or, you know, if you're from the mountain, you're cupping this dude's head and sitting up and trying to punch him that way. It's like, hey, please, you know, roll me off of you, bridge me off.
Also, let me pull his head towards my hand while I'm crushing it down.
Yeah.
That'd be much safer.
Yeah. And I think their argument was, well, you know, his head has nowhere to go if you punch him while his head's on the ground. Well, where do you think it's going if my hand's holding it up and bringing it into my fist?
Did you have to make the hit the ground with your knee to make the sound of hitting him? Was that part of the rules, like wrestling?
No. But I will tell you this straight up: if the opportunity arises in this fight, I'm doing a super kick and slapping my leg, like straight up to make the sound.
You need to get some sweet chin music on him.
I'm gonna do some sweet chin. If I can land a side kick, it's gonna be a super kick. I'm gonna slap my leg when I do it. And if I win that way, I'm kicking shouts out to Gentleman Chris Adams, to Shawn Michaels, and to the Young Bucks. Too sweet. What's up?
So the sweet chin is technically sweet chin music would be legal in an MMA fight.
Absolutely. It's just a sidekick to the grill.
I just want to see someone get it and like actually knock the guy out with it.
I saw somebody get TKO'd with one in an amateur kickboxing match in Morgan City.
Would this be disrespectful? Like, if you knock out the guy with that kick,
mm-hmm.
and then before like the ref can get over there, you get over there and like pin him, like pull his leg up. Like a wrestler. Would that be disrespectful?
I feel like that would be a little beyond the pale. Yeah.
Crazy would it be if the ref came down and started?
That would be even better. Now, if you could get coordination with the ref, I mean, this is going to piss off the opposite corner and the dude that you beat really bad, and it's really disrespectful, but that would be really funny, too.
You'd also have to find a ref that probably willing to lose his license. He got real quiet there.
Yeah, real quiet.
Yeah. All right. But,
no shit.
Did you see the video where the dude got disqualified because he did a flip off his knocked out opponent? I was like, man,
he did some crappy Rob Van Dam senton bomb.
Yeah,
it was a bad deal.
He should be if you've
already beat the dude, knocked him, the guy he beat knocked himself out trying to throw him, and then you jump up and jump stomp, double stomp this dude, and do a flip off of him like he's a friggin' springboard. I mean. What? Why would you even do that?
You're an asshole. Like, that's why you do that.
Absolutely. Like, no need. No need to even celebrate, really, if you win by a dude knocking himself out, you know.
Is there a more disrespectful way to do that?
I mean, I guess if you just teabagged the dude after you knocked him out, that might be
like
more
actually,
disrespectful.
Like, actually pulled your pants down and teabagged him?
No, if you actually did Halo teabagging him, where you just squatted repeatedly over him, that's even more disrespectful, in my opinion.
Hank, don't do that in your fight.
I've never done anything disrespectful in a fight. I always get along with everybody.
Oh, my God.
I think the most disrespectful thing I've done in or after a fight was get some chubby ring card girl to give me a kiss on the cheek afterward, and I disrespected myself, honestly, with that.
We've all been there. All of us. Mm. The first fight I ever saw you went was Gladiators, and the slip and slide.
My God.
That was the first fight I ever saw.
Man.
I was literally from me to you sitting by the cage. Yeah. And you could see the
puddles.
The puddle of water that was on the floor. They didn't use like a regular like mat that had a little bit of canvas.
They had just gotten that cage in, we were just using the tarp that came with it. It wasn't an actual canvas. It was just the plastic tarp that came with it. This is in the middle of July in Baton Rouge in our gym, which was like an old furniture department store. So it's a good 10,000 square feet. It's a big building, tall ceilings, everything like that. But, you know, it's all windows in the front, sun's coming through. And I think it was like July 7th or 8th or something like that. And they had no air conditioning. The air conditioning quit out on us that day. And there were a good 400 or 500 people packed into this thing. It was a big enough place to where we had a full-size octagon, a full-size boxing ring, big matted area, area for bags and kickboxing and weights and everything like that. It was really big, but it was packed up with people, middle of the summer. It's 98 degrees outside to begin with. So I think the actual, like, recorded time for my fight against a guy named Justin Scafidi, who we'll get into in just a minute because there's an awesome pun I made with his name. I lost my train of thought. I'm sorry.
Gladiators
Academy, Justin Scafidi, third fight.
Slick.
It's slick. So anyway, 98 degrees. We get in there, and that's what it was. The official time of my fight was only like 2 minutes and 15 or 30-something seconds, but it actually took about 12 or 15 minutes for the fight to transpire because we had to stop twice to have the floor wiped up. Because we had both sweated so much that we were both slip sliding around. So they stopped twice for that. And then another time I had on a metal tie cup and we were in the clinch. My back was against the cage and he throws a knee and he hit me in the bottom tip of that metal tie cup and rammed it straight into my taint. It wasn't even like a nut shot. It was that he hit me in the most impossible to hit spot on a human's body. And I thought I had broken some unknown bone between my butthole and my nuts. It was so awful. It was so bad. Like, people thought I was faking. They thought he had got me in the liver or something and really dropped me.
It's a liver kick.
Yeah, it didn't. It, when you kick, you got to kick good. Yeah, he just made me do my Boss Root impression. I'm sorry. I had a 5-minute, you know, break or whatever for that because that was terrible. And I didn't think I was going to ever be able to have kids. And I may not. I mean, we haven't proven that wrong yet.
Might be a blessing in disguise.
This is true. This is true. But we keep going on, whatever. Fights get stopped 3 different times, basically.
And we go back and forth. It was a crazy fight, too. I came out and rocked him with a 1-2 and then hit him with a flying knee, and it knocked him out. He falls against the cage, and I hit him with a left hook and woke him up, and we go back to it. The floor was real slick, like I was saying. I had a body lock on him, and I popped my hips in to suplex him, and I fell straight on my ass. Like, my heels just came straight out from under me. He got my back. I had to reverse it. It was a crazy fight. He rocked me at one point. I was actually getting beat there toward the end. He was on top of me punching, and he hit me and cut me over my eye, but I trapped the same arm he hit me with and arm locked him and tapped him out. And I got like 9 stitches over my eye from it, and his name was Justin Scafidi, and I've got this scar, so I call it Justin Scarfidi.
How dare you?
Yeah, no. Bad deal.
So, is that the only time you've dealt with a slick mat like that?
One that was that slick, yes. Because that was just ridiculous. That was literally like somebody had sprayed a bunch of Dawn and water on it beforehand and mixed it up and was like, sweet, let's get out here and tear ACLs. Good times.
Did anyone fall and like hit their head or anything like that?
I don't think so, but the main event or the co-main event, I can't remember which it was. It was a couple of dudes that were short, stocky guys fighting at heavyweight. And when I say short and stocky, I mean they were short and bowed up guys. Had a lot of muscle mass and everything. But neither of them were in just tip-top cardio shape. And they both had to get hauled off in an ambulance. Sliced up. That's a reference to Spodeody Delicious by Outkast, by the way. Sorry.
God, I didn't catch that reference at all.
Yeah, it's
not,
okay.
Not at all.
They had got hauled off in an ambulance.
Ambulance.
Sliced up. But they both had to get IVs and, like, oxygen and stuff because they were both just hosses in there having a hoss fight and got wore out and gassed.
They just got all the water from the mats and put it in them.
No kidding. I mean, they were absorbing it through their skin a little bit, I guess. But yeah.
It's disgusting.
Would that be allowed now?
Mongrels.
That
show would have got shut down nowadays. They didn't even have an ambulance there when the fight started. And we had to delay that because they didn't even know. They're like, oh, we have to have emergency services here? No kidding.
Okay, someone just knocked out and died.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's go get an ambulance. Thankfully, Sambo Doug was an EMS guy, and I think he was able to hook us up with an ambulance pretty quickly because we would have had to shut everything down.
So you have to have an ambulance there, but you don't necessarily have to have a doctor there. Is that right?
I think they did have a doctor there, but I don't think it was somebody they had asked to be there as a doctor. I think it was just some dude that trained there to be in shape. And happened to be a doctor, and he's the one that stitched me up. He worked at Long, at Big Free in Baton Rouge, and was a surgeon or something. And he just happened to be there hanging out watching the fights. He was like, oh, yeah, well, I guess I'll be the fight doctor, sure.
I'll sew you up.
Yeah. He's like, I'll give you my plastics job. I was like, oh, thanks, as opposed to your horrible, hideous scar job.
Yeah, but sure, give me a lightning bolt across my eye.
If it made me look like Cable, not really going to complain about that.
I would judge you for that.
You would until I, like, got a bionic half of my body. And then you'd be like, oh, well, I mean, it's dedication to the character. He really went through with it.
What was that movie with, wasn't Gerald Butler, that had the robots fighting each other? Was it Gerald Butler?
I believe that was Transformers.
Not Transformers.
Are you talking about Gamers where, like, he, that was the...
No, he can control the robot.
Oh,
like
you're
the
talking
two,
about
in the cage,
a Hugh
like
Jackman
a,
movie.
Hugh Jackman.
Oh, shit, what was that movie
called? Oh.
Do you remember that movie, that stupid movie?
Wasn't it was Rock'em Sock'em Robots or
something.
It was kind
of like that, yeah.
Give me a few minutes.
I remember they had, like, he had the cheap robot that was like the run-of-the-mill one that was like 10 years past its prime.
But he had a heart of gold.
But he was a robot with a heart of, with a steel. Mechanic, real steel.
Yeah,
with
real
with mechanic,
steel.
With mechanics of gold.
Yep.
They actually put gold inside.
He had AI of gold.
I just remember how stupid that movie was. My point was is that... Eventually, that's what MMA is going to be. It's just going to be robots fighting each other.
I don't even think it'll be robots. I think you'll have two separate guys that go into some room that is basically a souped up version of a HTC Vive. Or basically, you'll have.
Are you doing a shout out right now?
No, okay. I'm not. I'm not. That's code word Rogan for 25% off your first order of Alpha Brain or Shroom Tech. Onnit. Get on it. But no, I think it'll be like basically some primitive form of holodeck from Star Trek, and two dudes each step into their, you know, like arena, like octagon sized holodeck, and you can, they have like projections of the other dude to where you don't actually receive any physical damage or something, you know.
Well, if that's the case,
they'll make it to where you can do, you can, they can have the sport without people getting hurt eventually.
Well, if that was the case, you just give like people swords, like imagine, you know, you just turn it to gladiators.
Well, yeah. I mean, at that point, you can do whatever you want.
Yeah. Have it on the screen, having people get chopped in half and shit.
Yeah, or you could do that in real life in Russia right now.
Right now. Have you ever seen the videos in Russia where they have...
Like team MMA and stuff?
Well, it's not only team MMA, but they have like these pillars and stuff that you can get on top of and fight on top of them and stuff.
Yes,
like they had this one dude get punched and he fell off.
Yeah.
It was so great.
Yeah.
Would you do that?
I don't think so, man. I really don't. I mean, it looks fun from like the outside, but I feel like that's just asking to get an unneeded injury.
What about the okay? I was watching this one video, and I was almost 100% positive that it was fake, but it turned out to be real. And even when I was watching, I wanted to dismiss it, but I kept looking. I was like, that looks real. It was whenever the guy dressed up as Spider-Man and fought two guys. One was dressed as Batman, one just as Robin.
Yeah.
And when you watch it, you think, oh, this is fake. But then you realize, like, Spider-Man's putting some work on these guys. And he's kneeing them. He's, like, popping. Like, he knocked out Robin.
Yeah.
And I look back, and it's like, I think it was somewhere in Eastern Europe where they just got some Muay Thai guy. And some people who didn't know what they were doing, and they fought each other.
Yeah.
Two on one, and let me tell you, Spider-Man was whipping that dude's ass.
He's got spider sense, so he can feel everything coming. You know,
I mean, what is Batman? Hit him. What is Batman really? But just a rich dude, you know.
Yeah.
Well, he could help Robin out a little bit better. You can watch the video,
especially Jason Todd.
Oh my god.
Mm.
So how was? Get away from Final Liberty. Did you like the last few DC movies?
I actually have not seen them.
Really?
Yeah. Once I heard that Batman was killing folks in Batman versus Superman and stuff like that, I was like, no.
He killed folks in it?
Yeah. I never saw Batman versus Superman.
Yeah. See, I haven't seen either of them. I don't even think I watched Man of Steel. I was like, why are you getting a guy that's known for his dark, both his dark visual style and Zack Snyder, whatever. Why would you get the guy that's known for his dark visual style and dark narrative style from Sin City and 300 and everything like that? Why would you get that guy to do these heroes that are the opposite of the angsty teens from Marvel? DC heroes are supposed to be like these bright, virtuous symbols: Wonder Woman, Batman, Superman. Which, of course, Batman's super brooding and dark and angsty and everything like that. But the DC universe has always been like brighter and more, just a little more goofy than the Marvel.
Campy.
Yeah, that's the word. It's campier than the Marvel universe in some ways.
I watched Justice League the other day. Not that good. I mean,
okay. Let me ask, is the Batman that's in Batman versus Superman, is that Ben Affleck?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is that the same Batman that was in the Suicide Squad?
Yes.
It is.
But yeah.
He's not in there very much.
Yeah. That's okay.
Shows what I know.
Yeah, I hadn't seen Suicide Squad.
I haven't seen Suicide Squad. Yeah, I hadn't seen it either.
Have you seen it, man?
I'm a huge DC fanboy for life.
I mean, I do like Superman, but you know, I'm not like super into it. I don't know. Yeah.
I mean I was more of I collected the Justice League comics when I was younger. Howard Porter as the artist, and I think it was Mark Waid or Alan Grant that was writing at the time. They were really good. Like a relaunch. It was really good.
Here's a transition back to MMA. If you could, who do you emulate the most superhero wise with your MMA?
Who do I emulate?
Wow. Like hard hitting questions.
Wow.
Dig deep.
let's see here. Oh man. That's a tough one. Cause I don't think of comic book characters as MMA guys. Mr. T.
Mr. T.
He's not a superhero. The only like trademark move I have right now before I gain levels and unlock all my old moves, the only thing that I can really hit on a consistent basis right now that's kind of cool is throws. So Mr. T will throw you hell of a far if you didn't know that. Now get in the van. I'll drive.
Now, okay, let me ask you. Superman or Goku?
Goku.
Goku.
Yeah.
Okay. Goku or Hulk?
Goku.
Goku. Goku beats both of them.
I think so, yeah.
Do you think Superman can get, can Superman get stronger?
Can Superman, the Hulk get Superman, stronger? Superman can go into the heart of a yellow sun and get mega strong. And then you know, he's basically a solar battery. He absorbs all the solar energy at the heart of the sun, and then he comes at you full force. But Superman is vulnerable to two things. Kryptonite and magic.
And white women. Earth white women. Lois ruined him, man.
Clark Kent shows up to the Daily Planet first day. Where are all the white women at?
I'm pretty sure he did. What if Superman had not landed in the farm, just landed just like in Harlem?
What if he landed in Balkanville?
Balkanville? Oh my God, it'd be the worst thing ever. What would that be like? What would that Superman be like?
He would be
First of all, he would have been in a circus by the time he was three.
No. Superman would be have the highest production of crystal methamphetamine.
He'd be king of the trailer park.
And there'd be nothing, like he wouldn't have any good morals.
His fortress of solitude would be the empty shell of broken promises.
Look, we're not saying that everyone from Balkanville is like that, but if you're from Balkanville,
no,
you would know, you know exactly what we're talking about.
There are tons of good people from Balkanville. I'm just, you know.
You gotta pick
giving
some.
Them shit.
You gotta pick some.
Yeah. But, which, by the way, Broken Promises is not like some figurative thing. Broken Promises was a strip club in Balkanville in the 90s.
How do you know about that, Hank?
It was the stuff of legends when I was in high school because it had just been shut down and there was always talk of the stripper that only had one leg.
A stripper? Have you ever seen a stripper with one leg in actual, you know, assuming that you,
negative.
You know, you've never been to a strip club, so yeah.
I'm a Puritan. I've never been to a strip club.
What about you, Bassett? You ever seen a stripper with one leg?
Yes.
No, we weren't not going to get political, but I was talking to Tim about Stormy Daniels.
Stormy Daniels.
And I was we went off in this rant talking about how we didn't really think she was that good of a porn star.
And I mean, like, on no. further review of her work,
in your lab coat,
yeah. For science.
No,
for research purposes.
You know.
We didn't know science. That she was from Louisiana. I didn't know a clue.
Oh, is she really?
Yeah,
she's from Baton Rouge.
I did not know that.
She's probably at your fight that night.
Could have been.
She was. Could've I want to say at one point she actually threw her name in the hat, but she was like, I'm going to run for governor. I don't know if she ever actually put.
Oh,
you know,
that's right.
I don't know if she ever actually put pen to paper on it. But
was it really her?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember. Actually remember that now. That's crazy.
May 19th.
Yeah.
Let's get back to May 19th.
May 19th.
The return of Hammer of the Gods.
Hammer of the Gods. So,
how did you earn that nickname, by the way?
Oh, I didn't. I didn't earn it at all.
Okay.
I was just like, hey, I'm a Led Zeppelin fan, and this sounds really cool with my name because it's alliterative. And I just want to hear a ring announcer say it because it would sound awesome.
Who gave it to you?
Basically, my roommates back in the day.
So they were like,
which I'd been called Hammer for a long time, like back early in high school, because people call my dad that and stuff like that. So I've been called Hammer for a long time, and then getting into fighting and everything, and then when I really got into Led Zeppelin and shit, they were like Hammer of the Gods. So I just kind of stuck.
That's where it came from.
Yeah.
Alternate
nickname HBK.
What is Dylan's nickname? Does Dylan have a nickname yet?
It should be Dylan 100% nonstop, total action.
Never retired,
really. Yeah, Dylan Everlast Bunny, whatever they're called.
Okay. No, so
Energizer Bunny.
When did they tell you that when they asked you to fight? Was it
this was June, it was two? Back in January.
January,
middle of January. And John gave me a few days to think about it. And I mean, I knew what the answer was immediately, but I needed to really go over it in my head and kind of mentally accept what I was getting myself into.
So did you need that catalyst of somebody asking you to do it, or would you have done it eventually?
Well, I mean, no, I would have done it eventually. I had not planned on doing it this early, honestly. But I think that if he wouldn't have asked me, then I may not have ever stepped up and said, yeah, it's time, I want to do this.
Was it always at the cusp, like you knew, but you needed to have someone like that?
I've wanted to fight for years and years and years and years. It's just actually settling down and doing it.
Let me ask you this, because I recently got asked if I wanted to fight again, and it's like my desire is like, yeah, yeah, yeah. But I said, like, once you can step back from that desire, it's like, should I really do this again? Should I put myself through
it? Sure, sure.
Like, did you have that?
Absolutely. And, I mean, look, I'd not been punched in the face in 10 years until a few weeks ago. And let me, I'll be completely honest, my first sparring session was horrendous. I've been doing bag work for 6-8 months now, working on my hands and my kicks and everything, and been doing a little jiu-jitsu. And, of course, I've ramped it up in the past month or so. Everything's going good now, but... Man, getting in there with a fellow named Josh Lee, having not sparred in 10 years and getting hit, not having been punched in the face in 10 years, it was a rude awakening, and it was a reality check that I needed at the time to really hammer home, not to make another pun.
Intended.
Yeah, but it really just kind of galvanized how much work this is and how much how tough it is. People from the outside, you know, I've always worked in restaurants. I say always, I haven't in years, but I worked in restaurants for a long time, and a lot of those restaurants would show UFC fights, and I'd always see the casual fans watching the fights. They would just say the most disrespectful things about these guys that were in there fighting, whether they were gassing out or whether their stand-up wasn't that good or whatever it was. And it, I always took offense to it because people just don't realize like what it takes to get ready, to truly get ready and get in that cage and fight. It's a life-changing ordeal. It really is.
So when you got in the very first fight you had, after that fight, did you think in your head, like, I want more of this?
After my first fight, I said, that is the most fun I've ever had in my life. That is the most free I've ever felt in my life.
Ferris, you need to get in there and do it once, too, just because I know exactly what he's talking about, that feeling of, like, you just don't worry about anything else for 10 minutes.
You don't have a choice. You live completely in the moment in that time that you're fighting, because there's nothing else to think about.
Yeah.
It's fight or flight the whole time, which you've got to be calm and think within that. But the rest of the world fades away.
Yep.
You're
what about your cornerman? Can you hear your cornerman pretty well?
I usually can. Depending on how close the crowd is, how many people are crowded around the cage, and how loud they are, and everything. But yeah, you usually can hear your corner guys. And
not your first fight though. I couldn't.
No, first fight is just all nerves. But everything else, like I said, just kind of recedes. All your worries about your bank account, about your personal life, your relationships, whatever it may be, all of that just pales into what you have directly in front of you, because you're essentially fighting for your life.
Yeah. But you know, you were talking about the nervousness of your, I don't know if this girl's fight was her first fight, but Dylan's fight last weekend, a girl, she was kind of losing the fight. She was kind of an underdog in that fight, and she got the mount. She mounted this girl and started hitting her, and then she just gave up the mount. And it's like, all I could think in my mind was like, that has to be 100% her losing her nerve.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't like judging her for it. Mm-hmm. I was like, she just wasn't thinking in the time. Like, she was just reacting to whatever, like, her brain was like, hey, do this, and she did it.
Yeah.
So I was just saying, it's like, God, that girl, that had to be a nervous thing. That had to be like just a beginner's, like, something that I would do, anyone else who's never done it before.
Absolutely.
Would do, probably.
Yeah, it's a whole different deal when you get in there against somebody that you have never trained with before, never fought before. And when you're in the gym with your teammates and training, no matter how hard you're training, you're all basically speaking the same language.
Yeah.
Because you're all being taught the same thing. You may apply it differently, and you may have each have tendencies to do more of one thing than the other. But you're all being taught from the same book. When you get in there with somebody brand new, you don't know what their pace and their rhythm is. You don't know what their response to certain positions and moves are, like you would with people in your gym. So it's an exploratory thing. You've got to go out there and figure out on the fly what this person is, how this person's reacting to what you're doing, and how you need to respond in kind. So it's definitely different. It's different than training. It's different than hard sparring. It's a different deal.
And it's probably got to be a different feel to the air. I hate to be like a hippie, almost like an energy, like, this guy is really trying to hurt me.
Absolutely. Because you can spar as hard as you want with your teammates and everything, but at the end of the day, you know you're not really trying to hurt each other and that you're there to make each other better.
Sometimes. And,
yeah, sometimes. Well, thankfully, we've got a good group of guys that really take care of each other and are just there to help each other and make each other better. there's nobody in there trying to hurt anybody.
I know this sounds bad, but like at the gym I trained at for the longest time, we had a young, I say young kid. He was probably about 17, but he was just, he was like everybody at 17, but he was a big old boy, he was probably about 6 feet, well over 200 pounds. And he wasn't trying to be malicious, but he was just, when you're 17, you're full of piss and vinegar and you got to prove your balls.
Absolutely.
So one day in the gym, we just all finally decided to have enough of it and we just beat the brakes off of him. But it was funny because after that, he was cool. He calmed down. Yeah. He was very methodical in the way he approached everything and actually got to be really good at technique because of that day, and we just beating his ass.
Yeah. Sometimes people have to learn a hard lesson. I'm not necessarily like that way. You can tell me in the calmest way possible to change how I'm training or whatever, and that has just as much effect on me as beating my ass or cussing me out or whatever it is.
I can tell you this right now. I can get bad with it still a little bit, but fighting chokes a lot of times with especially with the gi on.
Yeah.
But after someone nearly put me to sleep, and I was like, I just need, if I'm in a position where I can't get out of it, let's say they catch me and I try to escape two or three times, as soon as I realize I can't escape, I just tap. I was like, there's nothing I'm gonna learn from. Yeah, I could tuck my chin and just
What good is that doing you?
It's nothing.
That's taking time away from other training that you could be doing. That's 10 or 15 seconds that you could be working on passing that guy's guard after you've tapped out and started back over.
Because I went from not wanting to tap at all, just to I had to tap, to just immediately tap. And the guy goes, you don't have to immediately tap. Just try to find the way out of the move. And if you can't get out of it, then tap.
Yeah, absolutely.
Don't tuck your chin and grit your teeth.
Hold it as long as you can without trying to improve your position. That's not what we're doing.
Luckily for all of us, we've all trained long enough, because I recently joined one of the jiu-jitsu gyms in town. And I think, it was something I was talking about one of the other guys that's trained a little while. And I was like, man, there's a point of no return. And I know exactly where it is. And once I feel you're at that point, I'm going to tap. I'm not going to. This is practice. I'm not going to let my shit break in practice. I'm not even going to get close.
Well, the thing is that, chokes and arm locks. Immediately you think that, the arm lock's going to be worse because I'm going to break my arm and stuff. But if you were in a street fight, you're probably not going to worry. My arm will get broke. But if you have some guy who's tough and you break his arm,
he's still coming.
He's still coming.
Yeah.
So, really, the choke is, you need to learn how to defend the chokes more than just. In a street fight, you might just let your arm break and just keep going, but if somebody gets their arm around you and starts choking you, that's dangerous, because once you're unconscious, they could just do whatever they want.
Absolutely.
Stomp on your head, hit you with a bottle, whatever.
There's Boss Rutten tells those old stories from when he was a doorman in the Netherlands, he wasn't a doorman. I think he was fighting some doormen, but he apparently knocked some dude out. Or choke some dude out, and then heel hook both legs while he was out. And woke up with broken ankles.
Oh my god!
But yeah, I mean, that's the kind of thing somebody can do to you though after you get choked out. I mean, you're at their will.
God,
bad deal.
Tap out.
Yeah.
Moral of the story, kids:
tap out.
Do some jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
Man, I see some people that just like. I hate to seem like I'm some kind of super sensei, even though I'm not, it's like, you have no clue what could be done to you by someone who's trained just even a year.
Yep.
And if they have some athletic ability and they train a year, you're screwed.
Yep.
You're screwed. You have some guy like Nick, he's getting started, and but he's also just a barbarian.
Yes.
You have no chance.
Yeah.
And let's say he wasn't near as strong. Let's say some of our, Billy, you remember Billy?
Yeah.
Dude is on fire good, man. White belt.
Yep.
Great. He moves good, and could you imagine someone twice his size coming up to him trying to fight him? He's just gonna mess this dude up.
Yep.
And they have no idea what is gonna happen.
Yeah, and you only can really understand that realization if you have trained. It is one of those things that you cannot fully communicate to somebody that has never been in there and done it.
I agree 100%. And touching on what you were saying earlier, there's one thing that I value more than anything. And it's along the lines of what you said earlier about training with people.
Mm.
Your new people that come in off the street, I value their input equally.
Absolutely.
As somebody's, I got another purple belt training with me. Cool, we're training. We're techniques. We're flowing omoplatas. We're throwing up crazy stuff. We're putting each other in really bad positions. But we have enough technical ability that we can look at each other and be like, all right, he's fixing to go for that. All right, I'm going to defend that. Now we're going to go here. The same concept applies to the person who comes in off the street. and they come in their very first class, they're going to throw stuff at you you've never seen.
Absolutely.
And I love that. I cherish that just as much as I cherish my trains with Mike, or I cherish a train with a purple belt,
yep,
or a brown belt who's kicking my ass. I cherish those way in different ways, way different.
Sure.
But they're on the same level of appreciation, and yeah, I love that.
When you have somebody new come in off the street to train, it's almost like putting you back in a self-defense situation, because this is somebody, like you said, that doesn't know what they're doing. So it's kind of the same reactions that you would have in a street fight if they hadn't trained.
Go ahead, Tim.
But what I was gonna say is if somebody has never trained jiu-jitsu and you get in a street fight with them and you get to the clinch, their reactions and their defense, whatever you want to call it, is going to be the complete opposite of somebody that has trained jiu-jitsu. That's why I think it is of, even though it is only one part of mixed martial arts, I think it is like the keystone of mixed martial arts. Without it being the glue that binds everything else together, both striking, wrestling, and everything else, I feel like jiu-jitsu, without jiu-jitsu, you don't have the sport. You don't have anything else. It's the crux and the heart of mixed martial arts.
Look at
my
you.
Opinion.
Psychology Hank.
Yep. Waxing poetic over here.
You know what's funny, though? And I don't know if y'all noticed this, but when I was a kid, all my friends, we used to just wrestle with each other.
Absolutely.
Just wrestle with each other.
We were pretty much rolling without
realizing.
Without realizing we were rolling.
But you know one thing I've noticed? A lot of the people who come in new, they're like, what do I need to do? It's like, you never wrestle with your brothers or anything like that? It always gets me. It's like, you have to have some kind of just like monkey brain. Like,
yeah.
But I think a lot of people are getting towards that. Unless they do train jiu-jitsu, they have no they never wrestle with each other just for fun. Whereas me and my brother would hit each other with blocks of concrete.
Yeah. Yeah. I grew up, like, playing professional wrestling and stuff.
Yeah.
I did. But then I had a buddy that had trained here locally and learned some very basic grappling. This was back in high school. And he put me in an arm bar, from the mount. And I was like, how do I get out of this? I can't get out of this. So we would do our, professional wrestling playing around on the trampoline, but every match would end with him putting me in an armbar because I couldn't get out of it.
You know, it's funny. I look back at that because we all did the same. None of us realizing how dangerous doing a pile driver on the concrete
was actually doing. Dude, I was probably 8 years old and at my parents' hunting camp at Fiddler Bend outside of Transylvania along the Mississippi River. And
I dressed this hair.
I was riding my Honda 125 three-wheeler, extremely safe, and me and other young kids were, riding our three-wheelers around or whatever, and we were wrestling, and I picked this one kid up, and we both had our three-wheeler helmets on, thank God, but I picked this one kid up, and basically just tombstone pile driving, like, for real, and he started crying, and I felt bad, and I think this is where the basis of me becoming a fighter starts, because I thought about this in retrospect. I was just going back deep into my memory bank. And I remember being in kindergarten or first grade. I'll come back to the hunting camp story because this happened first. I was in kindergarten or first grade. And my cousins put me up to fighting another kid that was my age because he and I both liked the same girl that lived down the street from my cousins who lived with my grandmother. So they made us get on the trampoline fist fight over a box. And we didn't really want to hit each other or anything like that, and they were yelling at us. So I finally hauled off and busted the kid's nose, and cried my eyes out about it and felt terrible. So I was put up to fight at a young age. Then
did you get the girl?
I did.
Okay,
that's right.
That's what matters.
Mr. Steal Your Girl, 7-8 years old. But then the hunting camp story. Let me go back to this. So the kid that I pile drove, he had an older brother that was like 14, 15, all these other older kids that had four-wheelers and stuff. Well, they were super manipulative of us younger kids. And they're like, all right, well, you meet us tonight at, 8:30 or whatever. You come down to this part of the camp, and y'all going to fight. You're going to fight my middle brother this time. So I remember putting on some, red and black cotton mittens and kissing my mother goodbye at our camp and be like, I got to go. It's something I got to do. And I go down to where we're supposed to meet, and there's like this circle of four-wheelers around us, and it's me and some other 7-8-year-old kid, and we square off, and then they turn the lights off on all the four-wheelers, and I hear this redneck voice, I taught him how to fight in the dark.
Wow.
And we threw down.
I don't remember the outcome of that. I don't remember if it got broken up or which if probably I won or if he won. I may have. I have no idea. I don't remember the outcome at all. But yeah, I've basically been, you know.
What was the prize for that fight?
I don't know.
Here's my sister.
Yeah, basically. I don't know what happened. I don't remember much. It was probably something along the lines of you don't get, you know, deer guts.
Here's a box of
20.
Here's a
something.
Box of 22 bullets.
Yeah.
For winning.
Which is still more than most people get paid as amateurs.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that takes me back to that that ring rulers fight. So I get back to this part. I meant to mention this earlier when you were talking about crappy setups sometime. So the hotel that they had gotten for all the fighters coming in off the road was so crappy that everybody protested, and they had to go get rooms for everybody at another hotel.
Was it the Roadway Inn?
I can't even remember. I didn't even go because I had some friends in Shreveport, and I just stayed at their house instead of staying at a hotel. But, yeah, I remember that part, too. They had to go get everybody new rooms because the hotel was so crappy.
I remember, what's the name of the hotel that we went to?
Roadway Inn.
It was Roadway Inn. Okay, so Tim's getting ready for his fight, or is after his fight, and I don't know where we went after, but we went back to the hotel room, and I was laying on the couch, and I was thinking, like...
No, we didn't even go back to the hotel.
We did go to the hotel room.
No, we didn't.
Because I remember... Toilet. Here's the thing. The toilet... To make it flush, you had to get the coffee cup and fill it with water and pour it in the back of the toilet.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it was bad. We might have, I don't remember, because like we had that drunk dude and that Mexican that didn't speak English trying to talk to us, and you and me were like, no.
Leave us alone.
No, this is what happened. We checked in, we went back to the hotel, did something, then we went and out and went to the casinos or whatever. And then like at one point, we're leaving a casino, and Ferris just looks at me, Tim, do you really want to go back to our shitty hotel room? It's only an hour away to go home. I was like, dude, let's get the fuck out of here.
Heard that. I did the same thing at Voodoo Fest in like 2007. Because we thought we had got some sweet deal at a Holiday Inn on Canal Street in New Orleans. This was 2007. No. This was 2006. So this was the year after Katrina. Shit was still screwed. So it was super bad down there. And we get to our hotel, and it's on the wrong side of the interstate on Canal Street, for one thing. And we get in there, and there are all these rooms that have busted out windows. The doors are wide open with no furniture or anything in them. Some of them have mattresses, just bare mattresses, like still sitting in there because they hadn't like refurbed this thing completely since Katrina. And it was going to be like five or six dudes all crammed up into this one thing. And it was scary AF. Like, I was not staying there. I knew something was going to happen if we stayed there. Some heroin addict or some gutter punk or some voodoo zombie was going to get us if we stayed there.
You're sleeping and all you hear is, eh.
Yeah. Seriously.
What you doing?
So I drove my ass back to Baton Rouge that night, which that's where I was living at the time. So it wasn't that bad. It's only 70 miles. It ain't that big a deal. But after being at Voodoo Fest all day, that was kind of a strug.
Yeah.
But it was cool.
What's Voodoo Fest like? I have never been.
Man, I haven't been in forever either. Back I saw a bunch of good bands when I went. I saw one year they had Smashing Pumpkins, Rage Against the Machine, Chili Peppers, Lenny Kravitz, Mute Math, Coheed and Cambria, Tiesto. I missed the Sunday that I really wanted to go to, though. Flamin' Lips and Duran Duran both were playing, and missed them. I was pretty pissed about that. But, yeah, I've seen a lot of good bands at Voodoo Fest. I just hadn't been in forever. It's a good one.
Did you ever fight in New Orleans?
No. Never fought in New Orleans. Furthest, I got, like I said, Morgan City, Baton Rouge, Shreveport, Monroe. Is that it? Yeah, I think that's it.
Well, now you get to add West Monroe to that.
West Money. First time I have ever fought in West Monroe.
You know, I almost think that the West Monroe Convention Center is a better place to watch the fights than the Monroe Convention Center.
Civic Center?
Civic Center, whatever it's called. I like the atmosphere there.
Well, there's not a bad seat in the house at the West Monroe Convention Center.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that it's a smaller venue, too. So, basically, I mean, it's just all floor seats. So, it's basically like all of the VIP area or whatever you want to call it that you would have at the Civic Center. There's no bleachers or anything like that. I like the Civic Center, though. Just because it's a bigger arena, it's got the big sound system and everything. It seems like a bigger deal, bigger production.
Yeah.
But Ewing's pretty cool when you get to fight there.
Yeah, I have. Like I said, I never fought there, but I've cornered guys there. I cornered John Steele for that fight. Slapped him in the face before he went in there. And
John Steele had a fight?
Yeah. And he was the nicest anyone has ever been to an opponent in that fight. He hammer-fisted the guy one time, and it echoed throughout the arena. And he was like, yeah, I shouldn't do that anymore. It's going to hurt this poor guy.
Did he win?
Yeah, he won. He won the decision.
Sweet.
Yeah,
we're trying to get him on next I forgot. It's Easter night, next week. Really?
Yeah, I was about to say they should have switched the opponents there, because Chris fought some like white rhinoceros and Steele fought some shorter Filipino guy or something like that. And it was like, why did we do these two mismatches instead of more equal matching? Which Chris still acquitted himself well in his fight. He just got caught in a guillotine with a dude with 24-inch pythons.
Oh, God. Yeah, like I said, we're going to try to get Steele on next maybe next Sunday, because Sunday's Lord's Day Easter.
That boy has some stories to tell.
God, I'm ready to get him on.
I know.
We're getting him on.
You need to do a multi-parter for that guy.
We may. We've done a few times where we've done our hour and 20 minutes, and then we're like, hey, we got more than we need to talk about. We just keep going. But last week he walked up to me and goes, hey, soon, Weird But Harmless. And I was like, yes, sir. I'll do it.
Yeah.
Because we'd already talked about it already, but he told me that he's doing it. So I was like,
yeah,
okay.
Good deal.
And most people, if they said, I want to come on the podcast, we're like, yeah, I have to talk to Tim and say, you know, if we want you. Because a lot of people, at the beginning, no one wanted to come on the podcast at all.
Right.
But now when multiple people come on, they're like, hey, can I come on? And it's like, here's the thing. Some people are just boring.
I was about to say, you know, how needy do you have to be to ask somebody to come on their podcast? I would never, ever.
You didn't ask. We.
I kind of asked.
I told. Here's the thing. Me and Tim had talked about getting you on, and I talked to you about it, and you're like, hey, man, what about the Weird But Harmless? I was like, yeah, we've already talked about it. Don't worry. Now, here's the thing. If we hadn't talked about it, and we were like, me and Tim were disgusted, and it was like, we didn't want this person on, I'd have been like,
See, luckily, there's one person like we openly discussed, and he asked about it on Facebook, and Ferris goes, well, Tim hates you, so no.
And you know, screw it. And it's Zach.
Yeah.
I won't say his last name. Zach Yarbrough. That's his name. Which I'm decent friends with the guy, but Tim and him didn't get along together. And
gotcha.
It's a constant thing on Facebook is like he'd say something and said, that's cool, but you're still not coming on the podcast. Like constantly. No, but I've had people ask me about coming on, and it's like, well, what are you going to talk about?
The thing about it is that we've kind of discovered with a lot of people, it's like their moment to get everything
out.
Yeah.
Instead of just sitting down and having a conversation.
And then, like, you know, some people like you got something to tell. And it's like, okay, I got a fight coming up, promote that, talk about how you got here. And that's fine. And then we've had, like, when Jason came on, Jason was just a friend. He knew how to talk. He's got some stories. It was just like an open podcast where, you know, guys like you, Quentin, Dylan, and Julie, and all the people we've had on that had something to say, it's like, okay, that's the main focus of this. Speaking of which, probably need to talk to Sheena again soon.
Yeah. You know, the funny thing is that you kind of did the same thing that Jason did. Is that at the beginning, you were moving like this, you weren't talking too much, mm-hmm. and now look at you're all comfortable and stuff. That's how most people who've never been on, they kind of are nervous at first. They don't know what to do.
It's like, anything else, you got to work yourself into it.
When Quentin came on, it was obvious that he had
done interviews
before. So we didn't have to egg him. We didn't have to push him on. He knew, even knowing and understanding the mics and, you know, when you need to get closer and when you need to be further away. Just, it's experience.
Yeah.
And he had that experience. And it wasn't hard to interview him because he knew.
And a guy like that's that talented and charismatic, good-looking guy, and good at what he does, it's important for him as a professional to know what he's doing in these situations, too, with the media and everything. He's got to promote himself.
Speaking of a handsome fella he's fighting, May 19th.
The return.
The return of Hank Hammer of the Gods Hamilton. Without getting too deep, I know you just want to win.
Yeah.
But how do you want to win? Without just calling them out and saying this is how.
Man, shoot, I don't know, hook or crook, basically.
Hook. So anything that you get.
Yeah, it doesn't matter to me, man. It doesn't matter. I want to finish. I don't want a decision win.
Yeah.
I don't want to be in there for 9 minutes or 11 minutes total. I don't want to leave it to the judges, nothing like that. I always fight to finish. I finished every guy that I beat. The only one I lost was a decision. So I always go out to finish somebody. I'm not out there going to go with some
on
point scoring game plan.
On your four victories, you had arm lock.
Two arm locks from the bottom. Two rear naked chokes.
Two rear naked chokes.
Yeah.
What about that knockout? You going to get that knockout?
No, I knocked down. I think I knocked down everybody that I fought, but the first guy and the last guy. So the middle three opponents, I knocked all them down. I knocked my kickboxing opponents down. I just never knocked anybody completely out.
I got to ask you something, and I'm hoping it's not a sore subject, but I've seen Joey Freed fight numerous times because we fought in the same organization. Were you just whooping his ass, and then out of nowhere he did something and came back? Cause
I was just super out of shape.
Okay. Every fight I ever saw him fight in Green Grillers, and he did this against a guy named Jason Carroll.
Mm-hmm.
Jason
knocked him down. And
Jason
got
beat the shit out of him for like, I don't know how long the fight lasted, but let's just say if the fight lasted 5 minutes, Jason beat the shit out of him for 4 minutes and 50 seconds of it.
Mm-hmm.
Joey just got his ass beaten out of nowhere, timed a punch in the ass beaten and just locked in a hole. Yep. And it's like, holy shit.
Yeah, Joey was a real tough guy, had real good cardio.
Used his head as a metronome. It seemed like, okay, doom, 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 doom.
Yeah, he was
locked in the lock.
He was really nice guy too.
Yeah, cool shit.
But no disrespect to Joey whatsoever when I say this, because he came out there and beat my ass for the last two rounds. I was not in shape to begin with, not in fight shape to begin with for that fight.
Mm.
And I cut weight really, really bad. I was like 185 on Wednesday. Or no, excuse me. Let me take that back. I got down to like 172 on Wednesday, got back up to like 182 or 3 on Thursday, and had to cut it all back again on Friday.
Yeah.
And I got into the cage, and I'd not rehydrated well either. Wasn't a good deal. I got out there and took him down, passed his guard, mounted him, and triangled him on from the top in the first 45 seconds. He rolled me over and stood up out of the triangle, and I looked up at him, and I was like, I really don't want to get up right now. I'm kind of tired. And I won the first round, but then I was just a punching bag for the last two rounds. I just out of gas. Kept coming forward. I never stopped, never quit, never quit trying to finish the fight, but I was just way out of shape.
All right. Well, Ferris just signaled me. We only got a couple minutes left. So, in your best professional wrestling promo, cut the Hank Hammer of the Gods promo.
Oh, my God.
Yes, you have to do
Ooh.
It.
Hold on.
I want you
second.
To cut the best promo.
I'll scream to you loud on the mic.
Okay, let me think. Which one are we doing here? Let me think of a good one.
I'm in.
Okay.
It's got to be Johnny on the spot. You got to feel it.
I got it.
You're returning for the first time in 10 years. What?
Okay.
Don't look at me like that, Basil.
No, I love it. I'm so anticipating this.
I know.
Well, you know, guys, it's been 10 years since I fought. And from what I hear, I don't know who my opponent is yet, but whoever it is, they're going to be tough as nails. But nails were made for one thing, and that's to get hammered.
I like it. I wish there was a little bit more emotion behind it.
No, short, sweet, to the point. I like it.
I mean, anyways.
So it's May 19th.
May 19th, West Monroe Convention Center. If you would like tickets, see me or Dylan Fraley or Jesse Butler or any of the myriad guys from Gracie Jiu-Jitsu West Monroe.
Don't forget Kylie.
And Kylie. Kylie
is the brains of the organization.
This is absolutely.
I have to make sure I put that in there.
The matriarch
and
the master. $25 if you buy them from us, $30 if you get them at the door. We also have tables available. They are $1,000 a piece for 8 seats, come with food and 3 drink tickets, alcoholic drink tickets, for each person there. So it's May 19th at the Convention Center. Come out and see us. It's not going to just be me. I am just a bit player in this whole production. Jesse Butler and Dylan Fraley and Josh Lee and Dan Street are all still young, upcoming guys. They've got a bright future ahead of them. If you want to catch some guys that are on their way to the UFC before they get there and see them on their way up, see your local guys, come on out and watch us.
I like it. Well, we're at an hour and 18 minutes, or hour and 19 minutes, so anything you got to say, Tim? Right now, we're looking at getting John Steele on. And if you don't know John Steele, you get to know him pretty well. He's the savage of savages, is what I call him.
Yeah.
He is the man of men.
The Ray to Reyes.
But we're going to have him on, and then Tim, you discussed about having
I need to talk to him, but yeah. I don't. I mean, it's free publicity for something he's trying to do, so I don't see.
Skate park?
Yeah, there's somebody. I don't know if the skate park's already built or he's trying to just get a lot of. I mean, that'd be why we have him on the podcast, though.
Yeah.
I'm going to reach out to him pretty soon and see, like, hey, man, this is what we do. This is what you're trying to do. It's free publicity for both groups if you just want to come on.
Okay, we'll talk to him. And
it might be an instance where we just have to record it on the computer and put it on. I don't know.
Okay, that's fine. Tim, appreciate it. My co-host and half of the Weird But Harmless podcast, Basil, for coming on. We need to get Basil on again so we can have
absolutely
stupid. And then Hank, good luck, and man, I appreciate everything. And I want to see I want to see a knockout, but I just want to see you win. Actually, yeah. I just want to see you have a good time in there.
Yeah, hey man, look, win, lose, or draw. The biggest thing for me is putting the effort in, being 100%, getting in there and doing the damn thing, and then moving on to the next.
All right. That is the Weird But Harmless podcast, and we will see you next time.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Yes, sir.
No problem.